Hello and welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sider. I'm joined by my co-host, Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, make sure to follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page if you aren't already at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support is very much appreciated, as always. Brendan, it's that time again. It's been about 6 weeks or so since we last did it. It's our trimester report cards. I know you guys enjoyed the last term bringing it back. It'll be two parts. Today, we're going to focus on the backcourt, though, which is going to be Josh Jackson, D'Anthony Melton, and Devin Booker. We have a lot of Booker content, though. It's going to be near the end of the show. But there's going to be a lot of really interesting stuff before that with Jackson and Melton. But, Brendan, this stretch of games for the Suns, it was actually all right from a win-loss perspective, even though we kind of got a perfect timing-wise, because I think 2 days later after we did our podcast, Kelly Oubre got traded to the Suns, so it's kind of a new team afterwards. But they went 7-18 over the stretch, so not too bad in the record books. I mean, 16 of the last 18, though, so kind of that beginning of the stretch there they got and really have been terrible since. So, Brendan, what's your initial thoughts here before we go into our grades?
I think it's really been splitting the season into thirds, but even just this second third of the season that we're looking at, you could almost split into two, like you just referenced there. It's been really stark from that mid-December stretch where we really thought this team was turning things around and went on a winning road trip and had a winning record for a couple weeks and four-game win streak and all that with Oubre and in the fold and Booker returning from injury. And then after that little 2-3 week celebration, it really went downhill in a hurry right as the kind of calendar flipped. So it's been bad, really, really bad, as we've talked about for the past couple of weeks since then. And Booker missed another little chunk of time in there. And this team just seems like, you know, every couple of steps it takes forward, there's even more 2, 3, 4 steps backward. So we'll get into how the individual guys impacted that, but it's really just been the name of this season for me has been inconsistency. You know, just you never know what you're getting night to night, as we saw yesterday when the Suns nearly beat the Spurs after looking terrible for a couple weeks. Now all of a sudden they're competing against a playoff team, and I think that kind of encapsulated how this year has gone and especially how this chunk of the season has gone.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they respond after that good game last night and having 3 days off here. That's really the first extended break they've had in about a month or so. So we'll wonder how they go after that. But let's kick it off here at D'Anthony Melton, the rookie on the list here, Brendan. And looking at his numbers here, he played 21.7 minutes per game. As you guys know, he sprained his ankle about 10 days ago. But his numbers aren't too bad, Brendan. When you look at him over the stretch of games, he averaged about 4.5 points. He only shot 34% from the field, but the defensive numbers here, 1.7 steals, 0.7 blocks, and only 21.7 minutes. That's elite defense production in that limited amount of time. But his offense really cratered off in the stretch.
Yeah, he's really a one-way player right now. I think his shooting, I know a lot of fans have been clamoring for him to not be starting, which obviously he's not now, out with that. Right ankle, I believe, right? Right ankle, yeah. Injury. Till around the All-Star break. And it wouldn't surprise me if it was even longer. No need to rush a guy like that back. I think you've probably seen more out of Melton, especially in this stretch we're talking about now, than you expected to. At least, I don't know if I was thinking that, you know, where minutes-wise, he's already up at 675 on the year, started 25 games, played in 33. Seeing as how they acquired him so late in the summer, I think you've gotten a pretty good sense of the impact he's going to have. So I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see him play much going forward. But I think what we've seen in these 27 or so games is just the immense defensive impact he's going to have. I think the shots are still a long way away, but 3.1% steal percentage on the year. That's stayed relatively high. He's in the 98th percentile for combo guards and 1.3% block rate, 96th percentile. So we've talked all year about how that was the statistical value of him out of college, and he's maintained that right away in the NBA, just creating plays on defense, wrecking havoc, creating transition opportunities. And I think we're seeing the impact of that. And now it's just a matter of him turning it around where he's actually able to finish some of those plays on the offensive side a little more consistently.
Yeah, zooming in quickly here on his offense for a moment, and his catch and shoots over this 6 week span, he took 1.5 per game, shot 32.3% on those. How big is it for Mel, not only this year, but really next year as well? Because remember, guys, he is a free agent after next year, so this is going to be a complicated situation if he does well next year and beyond. But what do you think just about his upside on that end? Because I think he really has to show he has some semblance of offensive creation in the next 18 months or so for a ownership that notoriously doesn't want to go into the luxury tax, and they could be in a situation if they really want to go grandiose this summer where they could be up against the tax and not want to pay a guy like Melton.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be restricted that third year. So, I mean, you want to know a little more about him before you decide how much you want to pay him, of course. But I think they do have a little bit of protection there. I think another, to kind of dig into those shooting numbers a little bit more as well, 10% of his shots this season have been corner threes, which is pretty high number. You know, you think about not only threes, but for one out of every 10 of your shots to come from the corner is pretty, I think it speaks to Igor's offense, number one, to get those shots consistently. And number two, you know, the value of Melton to be willing to take them. And he's making 42% of those shots. It's kind of like the one thing I could find for him from a shooting perspective that was actually going well. I mean, he's only shooting 37% overall from the field, but 42% from the corner. And like you said, a lot of, obviously, really all corner threes are catch and shoot threes. You never see a guy pull up from the corner. That doesn't really happen. So I think that's something you can look at as a little bit of projectable value as far as what his shot might look like in the future.
Yes. Let's flip it back over here to defense, because I'm looking at his stats and I'm just bewildered by how big these numbers are as far as hustle stats go. And his deflections per 36 minutes over these past 22 games for Melton, 5 deflections per 36 minutes. That's right near the top of the NBA. In only 21.7 minutes, he's right at 3 per game, which leads the Suns. So how big of an impact has he made just as far as trying to create this new identity with this team? Because he's at least, I think he is starting to rub off on guys like Mikal Bridges even more. He's even being even more active. Josh Jackson, especially too, I'm noticing, is even Devin Booker as well. It's just contagious. Like we talk about with Rashawn Holmes in the front court too.
I think it's definitely helped set that tone, and he's such an active and smart help defender. Him and Bridges both. You saw it again. I mean, it was a Bridges play last night, but I think it was just something we've seen from a lot of different guys on this team just around the fourth quarter. I think Bridges just LaMarcus Aldridge, they doubled him. He threw it back out to the perimeter. Bridges read it perfectly and deflected the pass. A lot of those types of plays just in and out since Oubre, Bridges, and Melton all became a bigger part of the rotation. Obviously, Oubre wasn't even on the team, but Melton, I think, has a lot to do with that. I think that'll only continue to grow, too. I mean, like we said, he's a guy I don't think we were necessarily even expecting to see as much as we have. So as his role grows, as his imprint on this team grows, I think you'll see that more. One weird thing, though, talking about his defense, he's only he's been pretty average as far as how much the Suns' defense improves with him on the court. It's basically the same when he's on or off. So that is one interesting aspect of it, especially when you think about his backups are basically Jamal Crawford and Eli Okobo, neither guy that we think of as being a standout defensive player by any means. So that is one interesting thing to keep an eye on, just what impact he has on off. That's not the whole story, of course, with a player, but I would have expected it to be higher.
I feel like an interesting caveat here, especially with guys like Mikal Bridges, too, who we'll get into for tomorrow's episode with the front court, but really good team defenders like Mikal Bridges and De'Anthony Melton, when you don't have really good defenders surrounding them, is really their impact going to show up much until they're like a true winning team?
No, I think that's exactly what you're seeing this year. It's like every so often, some of those guys will make big plays. Josh Jackson, big steal and transition dunk last night. He had a block at the rim. That play I talked about with Bridges getting a deflection. But that's not the difference between winning and losing. And if you're going to have a team where no one is necessarily a standout individual defender, just a stopper, but you're just going to have, you know, 7 or 8 good team defensive players and a well-coached, disciplined team, you can do that. Suns don't have that right now. They have neither. They don't have the stopper or enough team defenders to make it work. So obviously we've seen how bad the defense has been overall. But I actually have one question for you before we wrap up on Melton too. I know it's only, you know, whatever I said, about 700 minutes, far too early to tell, but you also hit it on the head when you said they only really have 2 years to make a somewhat of a decision on him, and they might be bringing a guy in this summer to get above him in the depth chart. So how do you feel about Melton long-term as a partner with Booker? You know, where do you see kind of his ideal situation and his ceiling? Do you think he's a guy who could be starting on a good team, on a playoff team? Do you think he's more of a bench guy, a low minutes kind of defensive impact, spot up shooting, switchable guy, or kind of where do you see him going forward?
I don't know about you, but I feel like he's more of a defensive version of Fred VanVleet in Toronto, where he comes off the bench and gives you like 25 and some nights 30 minutes if need be with his defense.
And yeah, I agree.
And if you think if Melton improves as a shooter too, he's going to be a guy you really can't take off the floor at that point. He really could eventually, if they don't really address it as much as I think they should, which would be a scary thing with a point guard position. But I think Melton, really low ceiling wise, I think he's an elite, as possibly being an elite backup point guard in this league. But that kind of gets me worried though, thinking about that, Brian, because I'm just thinking with the possibilities of an offer sheet next year, if Melton actually does improve, it does have me a little bit worried on that sense.
Yeah. And, you know, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but, one last note on him, as far as the contract situation goes, I addressed it in a mailbag a few weeks ago on Bright Side of the Sun. Just that you mentioned Fred VanVleet, the contract situation is the same from him because these guys are both second round picks. Their offer sheets maxed out the first two seasons at whatever that year's mid-level exception is, non-taxpayer mid-level exception. So it'll be around probably $9-10 million by that point. So you're not going to see like a max, literal max, like $30 million. I don't think he's going to get to that point, but you don't have to be scared of that necessarily. But I do agree those second round contracts can kind of screw teams, and we might see that happen with the Suns.
All righty, guys, before we go on to Josh Jackson for our next segment here, I want to tell you guys really quickly about the Locked On NBA Twitter account. If you're not already doing so, you go and follow at Locked On NBA Net. Brendan and I both follow the account. We have all of our Locked On NBA Twitter hosts all in one place, all in one account. Everyone's synced together. We have by far, I think, the most extensive coverage out there. Everything is right on one account immediately. You get everything outside of Phoenix. I know you guys love the press coverage out here in Phoenix, but there's so much more on the Locked On Network that is all around the country. So if you're not already doing so, go and follow at Locked On NBA Net on Twitter.
Before we go any further, I want to also tell you guys about a fantastic new way to save money. Obviously, there's nothing anyone likes more than saving a whole ton of money, especially on something that typically is pretty expensive. So that's exactly what Homey set out to change. They are a really innovative new way to buy or sell your house. Not only do they have a mobile app and an interface on their website that are easy to use and smooth, they also have a team of realtors and lawyers that are going to help you every step of the way to make sure no one is nickeling or diming you. But the main thing that they do, like I just said, is save you a whole ton of money. So you can buy or sell any priced home for just $199 when you list and $1,299 when you close. That means that on average, Homey customers are saving over $10,000. These guys came from Salt Lake City, had a fantastic customer base there. They're coming to Phoenix because they know that you guys need them. That's a big home buying and selling market here, and they want to bring you all of the savings that they gave the people of Utah. What we're going to do here at Locked On Suns to make it even cheaper is get you an extra $100 off that listing fee. So it'll be just $99 to list your house at Homey, and you're going to call a number, not a coupon code, not a promo code this time. It is a phone number. You're going to call 602-892-3335. Again, that's 602-892-3335 to list your house at Homey for just $99. Alrighty, let's move on here to Josh Jackson, a guy who statistically still makes your skin crawl when you look at the numbers, but I think especially maybe, I don't know, kind of concerningly the past couple of weeks as the team has not been its best, he's kind of stepped it up a little bit. So what have you seen from Josh this little stretch of the season here?
I feel like Josh has kind of, I don't know about you, but I feel like he's kind of faded off over the past week or so, ever since the winning streak that they had of four And his shooting numbers are really falling off too. If you look at the numbers here, he's only shooting 41.2% from the field during this stretch, 31.9% from three. Here's the thing with I wanted to ask you as well. Just I know we're not talking about Mikal Bridges for tomorrow, but that just kind of tied in together with both those guys. I just want to get your opinion because this popped in my head with Josh Jackson taking 10.7 shots per game in 26 minutes, but Mikal Bridges taking only 6 shots per game in 31 minutes. Do you want to see those guys flip roles as far as usage goes? Because I don't know why it's like that.
Yeah, you sure do. I think the just puzzling thing about Jackson's career this entire two seasons now has been the fact that he plays like he's an elite creator and he's not, and he never probably will be. I don't see him as that type of player. I don't really think that's why you even drafted him. You know, I've never imagined him to be that type of player. Maybe the absolute ceiling would have been something like that, but that's not what his skill set has turned into. That's not when he's at his most effective. It looks nothing like an elite creator. He's not Paul George. He's Andre Iguodala, or he's a player like that. He's a guy who turns defense into offense and distributes and things like that. So yeah, his usage on the season is 25%, which is in the 92nd percentile for forwards.
Wow.
It makes no sense that a guy who is so inefficient should still, after all this time, be putting up shots and turning the ball over at the rate that he does. And part of it is a lack of talent here, of course. We know he has to have the ball in his hands a little more than you would ideally hope for him to do it. But when you see guys like Bridges and Melton have strong scoring nights every so often, it's like, well, I'd rather see them try it than Jackson keep doing what he's doing.
Is it worrisome to you? I mean, obviously it's only a year and a half into his career. I mean, almost 2 years at this point, though. He's going to be 22 years old next month. Are you worried that he's not going to progress before his second contract to where he's even a respectable offensive player? Because he has these flashes like the 26-point game, even though it was in a blowout loss. But you think of everything else that he's done, it's usually nights like we see a couple nights ago where he's 4 of 14, 6 of 16. Those nights, like, I just don't understand how that keeps happening. And that worries me because if Jackson's an inefficient guy, it's kind of more of just like a discounted Andrew Wiggins at that point. I don't know if that fits because, like Ryan McDonough, the former GM, said at the press conference when they initially drafted Josh Jackson, he was supposed to be their top wing defender, and he's nothing like that right now. And Mikal Bridges already took that spot from him like 2 months in.
Yeah, I just don't. It's exactly why I feel like we include him in so many hypothetical trades, right? He just doesn't, he doesn't have a place already. In a season and a half, he's already moved to the type of, you know, depleted asset that another team is going to see as, well, we'll take a chance and see if he'll develop here. But that's really bad for the fourth overall pick, you know, two seasons in. That's why the other day I threw you the hypothetical of if you would accept his fourth year option. You know, that's a decision coming here in about 8 months for the team. And I think it's already in doubt, to be completely honest with you. He just can't finish. I think that's the biggest thing for him right now, taking all those shots. He's only making 51% of his shots at the rim. That's in the 10th percentile for forwards.
Isn't that a 5% drop off from last year too?
I think it is. I think it was some sort of drop here. I can look at it. Yeah, he just hasn't improved. He really just hasn't improved at all. And he's still good in the areas where he was good. You know, he's a solid playmaker for his position. He can make some defensive plays, but you can't be that bad on offense and stay on the court.
Yeah, let's just run through his box score stats really quickly. In 26 minutes, Jackson averaged 11.6 points, 5.2 rebounds, 2.3 assists, 0.8 steals, and 0.8 blocks, 2.2 turnovers as well. So that kind of went down a little bit. But when you look at that and you just think of the numbers there, the positive side of things with him, at least, we're seeing a different stroke from him as far as the release goes. It's inconsistent here and there, but he's shooting 37.8% on nearly 2 3-pointer attempts over these past 25 games for Josh Jackson. That's a really promising sign if you look at it, Brennan, because that was a guy who really last year at catch and shoots was shooting near 25-20%.
Yeah, the hitch is pretty much gone. I think that is one positive. It hasn't necessarily shown up in the stats as you just said, but I think if you're looking for some sort of positive from him, it definitely is that he's smooth on catch and shoot, especially. We saw one last night that was just picture perfect. Devin Booker driving dish. Jackson was open in the corner, the right corner, nailed the shot. Really just picture perfect, honestly. It looked like any other player in the whole league. You wouldn't have even known that that was a problem for him early on. So I think that's obviously great to see, but yeah, he's down 5% at the rim. So that's going to be the big thing for him, and not turning the ball over. So I think there's still a way for him to be a good player, at least a rotation player, not probably ever going to get to the ceiling you hope for with the number four overall pick. But I think he could still be a rotation player for a decent team. It's just the hill is still pretty steep for him. But before we move on here to our last guy, Devin Booker, give you a big breakdown on the Suns' best player. I want to tell you guys about the Locked On NBA show. As we get near the trade deadline, I don't know for sure if we're going to see too much from the Suns. We'll talk about that later this week. But I know for sure at Locked On NBA, they will be breaking down all of the league's big deals. You know, we talked about Anthony Davis here on Monday. If you want all the Anthony Davis coverage, I can promise you that the Locked On NBA show will be covering that extensively. National perspectives from Sam Amick and Ben Golliver. We have actually one of the Locked On NBA hosts is also the host of Locked On Pelicans, as well as the hosts of the Locked On Celtics and Locked On Lakers shows. So those guys are perfect to get any perspective possible on, really. So go subscribe to Locked On NBA, check out everything they're doing, and keep up with the NBA from Nationals perspective. Alrighty, also, let's go to Devin Booker here. Really bad stretch from him. I mean, kind of no way around it. Even his biggest scoring nights, a lot of them have been inefficient. His kind of advanced stat value has just tanked. I had it right here, and now I lost him because he's so far down the list, but he's way in the negative. Yeah, negative 0.52 real plus minus, which is a weird stat that seems to value some guys. Maybe it shouldn't. Klay Thompson is all the way down here below Booker as well. So it can be a little bit kind of victim of the moment, but he was really high, like in the top 50, far in the positive for a while. And his defense has just tanked all of that. So what have you seen from Booker? And do you think this is just a situation where the injuries have gotten to him, or do you think it's symptomatic of something bigger?
I feel like over the past week, he's gotten a lot healthier. It seems like last night, especially, it seemed like his explosiveness was kind of getting back to him after the injuries. And hopefully that maintained, especially within their couple of days off. But I think, like you said there, Brent, his defense is canceling out some elite offensive production now. I mean, he's shooting 48% from the field, a near 60 true shooting percentage. He's averaging 26 points, also 6.5 assists per game with 4 rebounds. But if you look at it, though, Brent, the defense, like we've been saying, 120.2 defensive rating, like 120.2 points per 100 possessions, by far the worst on the team. And it's really on some nights when the Suns are close. I mean, if you think back to it, Booker is really one of the main reasons why some of these teams go on these runs, because teams pick on him and he doesn't know how to really stop it.
Yeah, I said it last night. I think it's the way I've been thinking about it for a while. Is just it doesn't come naturally to him. Defense, it's going to take a ton of work. It's going to take, you know, diving into the film, practicing in game situations, of which he's obviously doing every time he plays basketball. But I just think the reality is we're far away from there still. You know, at least maybe not time wise, but he just has a long way to go. And we talked about it with Melton, the kind of defensive impact. Doesn't always show up with the on-off numbers for defense. It definitely has for Booker. So on the season, the Suns defense is 6.3 points worse per 100 possessions. That's in the 8th percentile. That's one of the absolute worst on-off impacts on defense in the whole league for a combo guard. I think for those stats, cleaning the glass, it's for all players. They don't separate by position. So just really clear that when he's out there, obviously that's against the starters. It kind of factors in a little bit. He doesn't have a consistent starting lineup. We know all the excuses you can make, but when it's that bad, it's kind of hard to ignore.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it's really, you hope it improves here soon, and especially heading to his max contract, it's going to have to be a main focus of his improvements, because he's going to have to earn that max contract, 5 years, $158 million. You can't just be a one-sided scorer in today's NBA. You have to at least have average ability, which you've seen James Harden improve really great as far as defense over the past few weeks or so, I've noticed. But
yeah, he's been up over a block a game, I think, this season.
Yeah, it's really great. Really awesome to see that development, though, and it's kind of crazy to me how people say they don't like watching James Harden. But that, let me just talk it back to you, though, for Booker. And what else have you noticed as far as him? I think the main thing for me has been the free throw attempts, Brandon, because he's averaging 7.2 free throw attempts over this 21-game stretch for Booker. He's missed a few games with injuries. But if you add in the past week or so, he's up probably near almost 8 or 9 per game. So he's really starting to round the form as far as being a guy who can get you about 5 or 6 threes per game, about 7 to 8 free throw attempts per game. And that leads to about 25 or so points per game on a nightly basis pretty easily.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting to see him continue to diversify the game. We're still waiting on the 3-point explosion we were hoping for. Yeah,
it's going to happen sometime soon, I feel like. It's going to be crazy.
Let's hope so. I mean, it'd be really worrisome for him to finish a season. I mean, I think he's shown plenty. I don't think I'd be worried long-term, but even so, to go 82 games or whatever he finishes at, what, maybe 20, you know, 60, 62 or something like that, even to go that many games without kind of regressing to the mean is a little bit worrisome. I mean, he's still at 32% on a great volume, so it's not like it just the floor fell out beneath him. But the most interesting stat I found for him, honestly, something that just stood out, especially thinking about what we were just saying as far as the three-pointers, and we've gone over at length multiple times this year that his catch-and-shoot percentage is still pretty solid. It's just he's taking so many pull-up attempts. And, well, it's actually two numbers. So the first one is that in November, he took 111 threes. And since then, he hasn't taken more than like 60 in a month. So in November, 111 in 14 games in 500 minutes. In December, he played about 150 less minutes, but he only took 62 three-pointers. And then this month, he played 378 minutes, only took 56 threes. So November, he was just chucking, and he only made 30% of them in that month. So I didn't do the math to see what it would be without that month, but with Isaiah Kanan in there and the rotation just in such flux at that point, he was really in a bad spot. So that was one of the things that stood out. The other one is he's actually been assisted on 34% of his shots this year altogether, which is in the 81st percentile. So we talk a lot about him not getting enough off ball, action. Yesterday he looked so good doing that more, but the reality is, at least from just the pure amount of shots he's taking, a lot of them are coming off of assists, which is pretty crazy.
That kind of speaks to Igor's offense, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And I think, guys like Melton and Crawford playing well enough here and there to kind of hold up the offense. But it also, I mean, not to beat a dead horse, but man, oh man, if he had another guy opposite him with how well he's shooting on catch and shoot and that number I just gave you there, like the season would look a lot different from him from an efficiency standpoint, for sure.
Perfect segue, because I was just about to ask you about that. If you're in the Suns front office right now, Brent, are you exploring the possibility of adding like a legit starting caliber point guard to really surrender some of your asset capital and your war chest, or are you content staying the course? Because I heard James Jones say on Burns and Gambo, and he seems like a guy who is content just letting the young guys go. And I just don't know if that's a smart idea with how frustrated he's been Booker recently. And I know it's part of the process, but I think you're stagnating the growth of a guy like Devin Booker, and you're stagnating the growth of DeAndre. And if you're not getting there just a simple starting caliber point guard, I know we like De'Anthony Melton, but two rookie point guards, Devin Booker is really forced into a role he's not comfortable with just yet. And I just think it's not a smart idea to keep this going. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, all things considered, I think the biggest thing I'm worried about with Booker taking on that role is more of a health thing. He's suffered through so many injuries. I know James Jones told us it's part of the plan to a certain degree. I think that's a little, I agree, but at the same time, like if it becomes something bigger, then that being part of the plan is going to look pretty silly. So I think it's tough, because at this point, I think there's probably no need unless you're going to really, like if you're going to miss out on somebody, if there's suddenly just this big bidding war for somebody like Mike Conley and you really like that guy, maybe, although Jones kind of seemed to rule that out too. So the only two ways I see it happening is, somebody like that, a veteran that they really want enough to go try to outbid somebody that wants him now to make a playoff push, which then you're going to probably overpay, or a restricted free agent so that you can have an advantage to re-sign that guy. That's why somebody like Tyus Jones or Terry Rozier has continued to stand out. And we talk about those guys so much. But other than that, you know, I don't think it's at this point, you know, the tank is going to get to be in full gear here pretty soon. I heard a couple different places people reference maybe, you know, resting Booker, extended periods and all that. So I think it could get to that point pretty soon for the Suns. And so I wonder if it's even at this point, giving up an asset to get somebody like that, if it's even really worth it, even though I'm completely on the same page that, you know, Ayton, Booker, Bridges, those guys would obviously benefit.
Yeah, looking at the tankathon.com standings here, the Suns are right at the top again. I didn't think we were going to be there at this point in the season, but they're right at the top of the standings with the Cleveland Cavaliers, tied for first in the Zion Williamson sweepstakes. But
yeah, what a positive note to end on. Do you think they get to 20 wins this year?
Oh, that is a really good question, actually. I think they barely do. I'll say 21 exactly, I think. So I'll push.
So same as last year.
Yeah, actually, I'm thinking more about it. It really depends on the next two or so weeks, in my opinion, because if they keep this losing streak going, I don't think they'll get to 20 wins. But I'm hedging my bets on them beating the Hawks after that good Spurs game and seeing what goes from there. But before we end today's show, Brent, I think we should give out our grades here for these three guys. And
yeah, for sure.
And for me, I'll start off here. I'll just go through Melton, Jackson, and Booker, and then you can give out your grades for the three as well. For me, D'Anthony Melton had a B-, just because I think his elite defense production was kind of washed away by his really shooting slump over the past few weeks. But Josh Jackson has a C, which is really the same kind of argument make here with Melton, that he's kind of been on and off here, really inconsistent. Either he has a good night there and a good night there. But I don't know. It's kind of wishy-washy to the point of Jackson. I'm kind of worried long-term, but he gets a C for me. And Devin Booker, who had a 120 defensive rating, but also had a 26 points and a 60 true shooting percentage over these past 25 games, he gets a B for me. So what about you?
Yeah, I'll go a B, just a straight B for Melton. I think all things considered, like I said, to see this from him so quickly, I think is the most impressive part. And we really had a lot of games in this stretch. We saw his career high in assists. We saw high steal nights. We saw, you know, some just really solid growth from him. So above average for sure. I'll go Josh Jackson. I'm actually going to go with a D plus, because as much as I've probably praised him on this show, and I have praised him in stories I've written and everything, as much improved as he looks, you look down and the stats are just as bad. So I think, you know, below average for me still, because he's not improving statistically. He's not getting better in the areas you need him to. And so I think D plus is unfortunately where I would land. And then Booker, I'll go with a C plus for him. I think just the defense to continue to, that's the team's biggest problem, I think. Inconsistency on defense, and for their best player to be one of the main, not only kind of fit into it, but sometimes be the main reason for it, is just really bad. And so I think he's above average because the offense has obviously been there, but everything else has gone away and kind of gone back to how it's looked in the past. So just slightly above average, I'll go a C plus.
Alrighty, that does for today's episode. Everybody, I appreciate listening in as always.